Travellers. I'd also like to begin by thanking the organisers of this conference for the invitation to speak at it. I'd also like to dedicate this talk to the thousands of Jewish activists, organisations and initiatives around the world who struggle to bring about a good enough peace in the very broken places that they work in. And in particular, I'd like to mention somebody who I've worked with, who is Rabbi Arik Asherman, who directs the extraordinary peace and human rights group, Torah Tzedek. This is an organization that promotes work as a protected presence alongside the embattled Palestinian and Bedouin communities in the occupied and settled territories of Israel. Now, despite the work that so many have done and are doing to resolve tensions around the world, it seems to me that peace activists are struggling on a new front today. A pronounced and growing sense of the inevitability of conflict and the increasingly accepted perception that violence is a determinant or structural outcome, not only of the current global order, but of new technology, of geography, biology, climate, and other natural systems beyond our control, making for many outbursts of aggression feel like an inevitable outcome of specific conditions rather than a series of conscious decisions. One of the results of this is that diplomacy or the rules-based negotiations that we've relied on appear increasingly irrelevant, and conflict being the only remaining method of resolving baked-in tensions. So whilst determinism and that family of beliefs, inevitability, fatalism, destiny, predeterminism, still rarely figure in campaign slogans, the underlying principles are again shaping our politics. We only have to see how the current Secretary of War in the United States speaks about conflict as a determined moral and theological outcome of fixed human nature to understand the direction that we're moving in. A new normal or more less restrained conflict where human agency is increasingly superseded by notions of managing inevitable aggression. In this context, I've been wondering then whether Kafka's little tale of existential despair, determinism, and absurdity, retold from the perspective of the British philosopher Gillian Rose, might be an interesting way to approach the topic of designs for a good enough peace from a Jewish perspective. A perspective that has for centuries elevated choice over determinism, an axiomatic belief in free will being essential for the system of commandments, the mitzvot, that variously guide the Jewish community's daily life. I'll begin then by recounting the Eine kleine Fabel by Franz Kafka, for those of you who are not familiar with it. It's a short story that illustrates Kafka's well-known despair regarding determinism in human life and a lack of genuine choice in a fatalistic world. It tells a story of how we're trapped by inevitable forces, making any attempt to change or to choose differently seem illusionary. The Little Fable by Franz Kafka. Alas, said the mouse, the whole world is growing smaller every day. At the beginning, it was so big that I was afraid, and I kept running and running, and I was glad when I saw the walls far away to the right and to the left. But these long walls narrowed so quickly that I'm in the last chamber already, and there in the corner stands the trap that I must run into. You only need to change your direction, said the cat, and ate it up. The fable functions then as a microcosm of Kafka's fictional universe, a universe of predetermined ends and the illusion of choice, The mouse is fleeing a world which frightens him, so he's heading towards something safer, something better, something altogether more ideal. But Kafka points out that each of the exit points on offer leads with a certain inevitability to the same conclusion, in this case, to the mouse's death. And to have believed in any other possibility, Kafka reminds us, is simply part of a dark joke told by the cat. The tale then chillingly represents how life, no matter what direction we think it is taking, has an inevitable outcome. Everything is fixed. This is no abstract philosophical theory for Kafka, but a suffocating lived reality. He believed that we are powerless against arbitrary forces or the substantial determinants of fate. The paths that we take are predefined. There is no choice. Now, although Gillian Rose didn't comment on Kafka's fable directly, I feel that if she had, she would have argued that the howl, the pure cry of pain or protest against our impotence that we read in the fable, is a hopeless protest, because it does nothing to change the circumstances it is protesting. The peace and freedom that we seek will only be found, Gillian Rose believed, by staying in the fray, by negotiating the brokenness of the worldly path that we are on, by standing our ground between the walls, by struggling against the forces of perceived determinism, no matter how unavoidable they may seem. Even if we fail, Gillian Rose argued, it is in the choosing to struggle with what feels determined that defines us, defines our humanity. Not looking for a way out. It is negotiation then between our agency and the powers that work beyond our immediate choice or control that we must pursue. The tragedy of the mouse for Gillian Rose is that it didn't understand this, and that it believed that there was a route out, something beyond struggle that it could avoid, in a way to avoid the fear, the catastrophes and the wars that were frightening it, by simply taking the determined exit point. So if we were to read Kafka's little fable from the perspective of Gillian Rose, it might go something like this. Alas, said the mouse, the world is narrowing. At first it was so wide that I was afraid, and I ran on and on and on, and was glad at last when I saw the walls narrowing to the left and to the right. But as the walls drew closer, the mouse didn't simply lament the loss of its horizon. It stopped running, and a cat appeared at the end of the corridor. You must change your direction, said the cat. But the mouse did not turn his back and run the other way, nor did he walk into the cat's trap. Instead, he stepped out and into the middle of the path, ready to negotiate. I will not change my direction, said the mouse to the cat, to suit your hunger. The cat bared its teeth. But the mouse stood its ground, refusing the piece of the trap offered by the cat, knowing that he might still be eaten. The mouse nevertheless decided it would be better to take the risk of negotiating a good enough peace with the cat, even if it failed. So the key change in this version of the little fable is that the mouse doesn't look for a perfect escape, to live free from fear or untouched by the risks involved with the negotiations of political life. Rather, the mouse stays in the fray of the broken middle with the cat, seeking a good enough, although permanently agonistic existence. Because living in a broken, less than perfectly negotiated peace is actually better than pursuing the illusion of a pure but non-existent peace, or a utopic one, or indeed opting for the certainty of something with a determined end. As Gillian Rose wrote in her memoir, Love's Work, you are always more powerful than yourself, which is taken by many to mean that although the power that others hold over us is real, we are never or must never opt to be reduced or to be determined by them. So following Gillian Rose's political philosophy, the mouse is able to transform the little fable from a story of destiny and impotence into a story of politics and struggle. Now, I say all of this because I think that future designs for a good enough piece not only necessitate staying in the fray, as Gillian Rose taught, negotiating people and organisations that we find challenging, no matter how exhausted or disillusioned we might feel, but it is a Jewish teaching as well. It's a complicated picture, but a Jewish theology of peace, or shalom, in this world at least, is not understood as a perfect peace. And that is actually the point, because worldly peace will always be imperfect, which means that we must constantly engage with the struggle to make it better, good enough. This is the literal etymology of Israel, meaning the one who struggles with God. Nothing is determined, not even divine decrees. Everything is to be constantly grappled with, engaged with, turned over and over again, no matter how persuasive the divinely determined argument or teaching might seem. And perhaps this is especially significant at the moment, when we're hearing so much about the preordained cycle of violence between the state of Israel and its neighbours. This situation for many Jews is not the decreed reality that some argue, but rather a constant call to create a new reality. And as Gillian Rose pointed out, calling this war inevitable or baked in, written in scripture, is quite simply a dangerous way to avoid taking political responsibility, which it seems to me is what many are tempted to do today. And this is a problem. In a profoundly disturbing and ironic term, determinism, destiny, fatalism, however people understand these forces, the notion of a certain inevitability as opposed to choosing to struggle is back in vogue. People are opting for the assurances of destiny over the ambiguities of struggle. And Kafka's nightmares about the helplessness of the individual against the incomprehensible predetermined system, trapped in a fate that they didn't choose, that they cannot change, is becoming, for too many, a source of assurance and comfort today. A psychological and social exit, a cognitive closure from the complex and paradoxically polarized world that we find ourselves in. We are freely walking into the Kafkaesque trap that might be called neo-determinism, where biology, nature, data, and our social environments are understood as an inseparable, predetermined loop, rebranded as comforting certainty. We're trading the burden of freedom and personal responsibility for the safety of being programmed. People are opting for easy answers, an evasion of the agonistic, or a rejection of the necessary struggle of staying frail and building a good enough peace, because so many of life's problems today are pitched to us as intractable. So whether it's the toxic manosphere, the race relations of MAGA, the trad movement, environmental determinism, or the natural nationalism of the far right, these are all forms of intellectual and political abdication that are on the rise today, a posture that Gillian Rose understood only too well, as one whose aim is to stop the political conversation, replacing debate for the certain unalterable truth and predictability of forces beyond us. This, she said quite simply, is the posture of a dangerous and holy ignorance. The impact of this resurgence of deterministic and nature-based thinking ripples beyond the personal, significantly reshaping global conflict and violence by hardening social divisions and justifying aggressive political actions as inevitable. Ethnic conflicts based in innate group differences make struggling for a good enough peace between them seem unnatural or impossible. This trend towards determinism is not only replacing the Enlightenment ideals of a negotiated peace and universal rights, ideals on which the UN was founded, it is saying that conflict and violence are inevitable, unstoppable, and that we should make our peace with this, not struggle against it. Determinism has become a refuge, a way of avoiding the risk of failure and the difficult work of negotiating in a broken world. And it offers the luxury of innocence, in which systems can be blamed rather than our own actions and beliefs. The question for me then is, how can people be moved on from this notion of determinism in its many guises? It is a safe space. How can we confront this notion that it's a safe space or a solution to anything? I need to think that I can persuade people that the outsourcing of their agency to systems and algorithms, to DNA, biology, and natural hierarchies actually has no future in it. And that we must start seeing ourselves as people who can act again, who believe in humanity's potential, who celebrate its bold spontaneity and stand by its broken, but not entirely failed, integrity. In defiance of the inevitable, of fate, of what is written in the stars, humanity must trust again in its ability to reflect on its failings rather than to react to them. For me, this is a political question, but it's also a theological issue. For example, according to the Talmudic rabbis, God created humanity knowing that it was fallible and imperfect, a teaching that directly counters determinism by shifting the focus from predetermined outcomes to the process of human effort, agency, and responsibility, leaving the core of human character autonomous, which means that, for Jews, far from ever being in a completed or finished state, human wholeness or integrity is positively growing, usually in relation to another. Never completed, and always an active ground for choice, meaning that although we are created with a capacity for holy life, we must choose to actualize it. Paradoxically then, for a human to be truly whole and made in the image of God, Betzelem Elohim, humans must possess and act on their free will. Rather than a collection of determined biological data points, then, humanity is always in a process of thinking and acting so that its internal values and external actions become gradually and holistically aligned, expanded via an unpredictable experience, transcendent then, not programmed, truly extraordinary. And it's this, despite our many troubles, that we must restore faith in. The consequences of not embracing belief or hope in people is evident already, seen in an erosion of the notion of the universal worth of humanity, resulting in ever-increasing outbursts of nihilism and violence. Somehow we have to reconstruct the most important of narratives, that despite its profound errors, humanity is a cause for celebration, not catastrophizing. This is not to relieve us from the burden of being better, but to emphasize that being human is a struggle-filled pursuit that we must have the courage and vision to progress. This is why Julia Rose argued that peace can never be a place arrived at. Real peace is something that we must constantly forge together, imperfectly, in the broken space, always refusing the fantasy of completeness. A good enough peace, then, is not an abstract or determined ideal to be achieved, but a continuous, structural work of facing difficulty and failure. It's the hard work of mediating differences without ever thinking that you can eliminate them. But for this difficult work to continue, humanity must believe in itself, form new solidarities and work together through painful and complex realities, rather than seeking to escape them. Most deterministic theories focus on the individual, its DNA, its data, its fate, but collective action can change what appears to be fixed, which is why the single mouse in Kafka's little fable must form a solidarity with other mice. Not a solidarity of likeness, but a solidarity of shared struggle. Who then, the mice, instead of running towards the cat with its false promise of an end to their suffering, inhabit the middle together. The dangerous space between the walls and the trap. Here they organize and negotiate, shaken out of their individual terror and into the difficult world of building community, under enormous pressures. And so the little fable becomes a longer story and a more complex narrative about the work of living in the world where humans must constantly recreate their shaken community in the face of fragmentation, exhaustion, and disillusionment, seeking neither a perfectly harmonious or conflict-free state, determined or utopic, but simply the strength, imagination, and self-belief to commit to the hard work of mediation and unwavering negotiation of discord. This then, when all is said and done, is a somewhat Jewish design for a good enough peace. Thank you.